From the main ballroom of the Hotel Astor in New York, where the 110th convention of the New York City Federation of Women's Clubs is now in session, Mutual's Special Features Division brings you the keynote address on this afternoon's program. Congressman Martin Dyes of Texas is the speaker. He will be introduced to you by Mrs. Rudolph M. Binder, the president of the Federation. And now from the speaker's platform, Mrs. Binder.
In view of the challenge to democracy that the chaotic situation of the world today has laid upon the doorstep of the American people, and in view of the fact that it is up to the women, particularly the organized club women, to do something about it, this administration of the New York City Federation of Women's Clubs has chosen American patriotism as their outstanding work for these next 2 years. We hope to start a movement throughout the United States among women's clubs to work definitely to destroy un-American activities and to build up a stronger consciousness of old-fashioned patriotism throughout this blessed land of freedom. With that aim, we ask the most outstanding man in that field to address our convention. We in America owe to this man our eternal gratitude for digging out and exposing the termites that have been trying to destroy our democracy and our democratic form of government. We hope that every patriotic club in the United States will do their utmost to further his work and that of his committee. A warm welcome from this group awaits the first speaker of the afternoon, the chairman of the Committee on the Investigation of Un-American Activities, United States Congressman from Texas, the Honorable Martin Dyes. Mr. Dyes.
Madam Chairman, fellow Americans, we are living in a critical period. Throughout the world, democracy and the principles for which it stands is being seriously challenged by the forces of atheism and materialism. We have in our own generation witnessed the revival of the ancient pagan religion of statetolatry, or the worship of the state. There is nothing new about the pagan religion of statetolatry. It is as old as history. It was the religion of the pharaohs and of the Caesars. It is the religion of every autocrat and of every dictator the world has ever seen. It is based upon the materialistic concept of man. It is diametrically opposed to the principles of democracy and Christian civilization. It is opposed to everything that Americanism represents. For Americanism is based upon the spiritual concept of man. It is based upon the recognition of the fundamental rights of every individual. For we in America hold that God created all men equal and endowed them with certain inherent and inalienable rights, chief among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We believe that the humblest individual in our midst, regardless of race, religion, or economic condition, was endowed by his creator with certain fundamental God-given rights, and that since God gave man these rights, there is no human agency that can take away those rights legally. Therefore, today, this spiritualistic concept, based upon the recognition of a God and the belief that God created man and gave him his inherent rights, is challenged by the forces of atheism, by the forces of materialism, by those forces which proclaim that man is the product of nature, and that by his own initiative and by his own ability and by his own application, he and he alone can determine his fate or his role upon the earth. Therefore, my friends, we have witnessed across the waters, fascism, communism, and Nazism, which are merely cults or different cults of the same pagan religion. They are new words for old ideas. And when we come to study them in the light of their theory and practices, we are impressed by one astonishing thing, and that is that they are all founded upon the same fallacy, the same erroneous conception of man and of the universe. While they appeared to be at war with one another, the fact is that the underlying principle is the same. For as Mussolini did proclaim, nothing outside the state, nothing against the state. And as Hitler said in Mein Kampf, that the individual must be subordinated to the interest of the state. And as Lenin and Karl and Marx and all of the founders of communism have proclaimed, that the state must be supreme and the rights of the individual must be subordinated to the state. You and I are naturally concerned with what is happening across the waters. We cannot view with indifference the tragedy that is being enacted over again. Naturally, we are sympathetic with the forces of democracy and the struggle of democracy to preserve itself. But of more immediate concern to us are the enemies within our own country and the threat within our own midst to our own institutions. While I sympathize, as I frankly tell you, with England and France, in spite of their base ingratitude which they displayed towards us after the last war, while I sympathize with them, nevertheless, my fellow Americans, I am convinced that the greatest contribution we can make to the peace and the happiness of mankind and to the cause of democracy is to stay on our own shores and make democracy work. And make democracy work within the framework of the American Constitution and under the American flag. Therefore, when I hear people who are so much concerned about the enemies from without, when I see such elaborate preparations made to combat enemies across the waters, then when I witness the indifference and unconcern on the part of many of our people, with regard to enemies in our midst, with regard to subversive elements and groups and organizations which are undermining or seeking to undermine the pillars of the Republic and to establish upon this shore the same character of dictatorial government which exists across the waters in Germany and in Russia and in Italy, then I wonder if it is not time when you and I and every American citizen must say, we are 3,000 miles from Europe. Here we are in this hemisphere, and our duty is to prove that self-government is workable and is practicable on these shores. I therefore cannot listen with sympathy to those who minimize or underestimate the influence of subversive groups in America. For I know, my fellow Americans, that no republic was ever destroyed by enemies from without. Republics are destroyed by enemies from within. Before Czechoslovakia was ever invaded, before the German troops marched into Poland, they first sent their emissaries, their propagandists, their agents, and they so thoroughly weakened those countries from within that they were incapable of offering serious resistance to the German troops. And indeed, that is as old as history. For the Roman Republic, which was so powerful and mighty in its day, was not undermined or destroyed by the enemies from without, but because of sin and immorality, because of corruption from within, because the people became effeminate, because they lost all conception of the fundamental truths of life, did the Roman people fall. And so it was in Greece and on all of the ancient nations that ever existed. And so it will be in the United States if you and I and the American people listen to the doctrines of atheism and materialism, which destroyed every republic that ever existed in the past. These enemies within our country are not easily exposed. It is most difficult to expose fearlessly and without partisanship the termites who have ceaselessly gnawed at the pillars of this republic, because there are those who would like for us to be partisan when the question is involved. I said in the beginning of this investigation that I was determined it would be conducted without fear and without favor, and that I would not hesitate to expose any man, whether he's a Democrat or a Republican, whether he's a New Dealer or an anti-New Dealer, whether he works in the government or whether he's working in industry. And only on that basis can I reconcile my attitude with my conscience. If the time must come when, in the interest of a political expediency and in behest to the mandates of party leadership, I must nullify my conscience, I'll surrender my commission and go back to private life, at least with my honor unimpaired. My people have been Democrats as far back as I can recall. My father served for 10 years in the House of Representatives. But when he differed with Woodrow Wilson on account of the League of Nations and what my father thought was a departure from traditional American policy, he did not hesitate to jeopardize his political life. While I love my party, I love my country more. And I know after nearly two years of tireless work and of honest, conscientious effort to do the right thing, to discover what the truth is and to let the American people know the truth without fear and without favor, I know that the subversive elements in this country have made tremendous progress. I know that they have gone into the labor unions, and as witnesses before our committee have testified, nearly or at least one half of the directors of the CIO are either communist or were communist or followed the communist line. And I know that the federal government has communists in key positions, and there isn't any political consideration on earth that will deter me from telling the people of this country the truth. I naturally grieve that the leaders of my party and the president of my country takes issue with that, or at least with what I conceive to be my duty. It may be that I am wrong. I do not undertake for one moment to say that my wisdom or my judgment compares with the chief executive of this nation. And I cannot now nor ever to enter into any personal controversy with him. But this I will say to you, Mr. Franklin D. Roosevelt, upon this occasion, that you may regard the publication of the names of members of a communist front organization as a sordid thing. You may be correct, but in my way of thinking, government employees who belong to organizations that have been shown conclusively to be dominated and controlled by agents of a foreign power ought to be exposed, and the American people ought to know. More than a year ago, our committee exposed the American League for Peace and Democracy as a communist-dominated organization. On January the 3rd of this year, the committee unanimously filed a report, and in that report branded the American League for Peace and Democracy as an organization which was organized and is controlled and dominated by the Communist Party. That was not the declaration of anti-New Dealers. It was not the declaration of pro-New Dealers. It was not the declaration or the decision of Republicans. That was the decision of every member of that committee. And when the American League was exposed as a communist organization, did the government employees in that organization manifest any concern about it? They did not. The officers in the League at Washington who hold government positions denounced the committee in the most scathing terms. Indeed, they questioned the motives which prompted our conduct. They had a year's time in which to disassociate themselves from the American League for Peace and Democracy. But instead of doing that, they denounced this committee. They just sought to heap ridicule upon it. And then finally, my fellow Americans, this committee said, is it right for us to expose the poor, ignorant communist on the street? Is it right for us to expose the members of fascist organizations if we are going to be so cowardly as to protect government employees occupying, in many instances, key positions in this government? Can anyone now doubt that the American League is a communist organization? The evidence is so overwhelming to that effect that no one has seriously challenged it. I hold abundant evidence which, in my judgment, will convict the League in the courts of this land because they fail to register as agents of a foreign principle. I can cite from some of the leaders of the League. Earl Browder was its vice president for a long period of time. And what did Earl Browder, the vice president of the League, say? I hold his own quotations in which he frankly said upon numerous occasions that the League was a communist front organization. I have the statement of the League's manifesto, or rather of the manifesto of the Amsterdam Congress, which was the beginning of the League, a Congress which was largely dominated by non-communists. It was called in 1932. It adopted a manifesto which, among other things, praised the Soviet Union and, among other things, recommended that members of the League should go into munition plants, into the Navy Yard, into the government bureaus, in order that they might sabotage our machinery in case of war. That was the open declaration of the Amsterdam Congress. And when the Committee Against War and Fascism was formed in the United States, they carried that declaration into their manifestos. So that we find even today, when we examine the file of the League in the city of Washington, we find in the minutes of the League that they had recommended and had adopted a plan under which government agencies would build up nuclei of members in the League. We even had evidence from the lips of members of the League who worked in the Navy Yard in the city of Washington, all in line with the original purpose and the avowed manifesto of the League back as far as 1932. I do not have time to even review some of the testimony which this committee heard with reference to the League, but this much I do say, that it was so conclusive that not a member of the committee has ever questioned the fact that it was a communist who was sent to the United States to organize the League, that the League was a national organization parallel with many other national organizations, all organized approximately the same time on orders from Russia, on orders from the Communist International. And in the files of the League, what do we find? Why, in Chicago, we found that the secretary of the League was writing to members and urging them to increase the circulation and the subscriptions of the Communist Midwest Daily Worker, a newspaper which is admittedly communist. We find in Milwaukee that a woman, Mrs. Barr, an outstanding worker in peace causes and a member of the National Committee, came before our committee the other day and frankly said that when she was invited to speak under the auspices of the League only a short time ago, and she prepared her manuscript denouncing Russia as an aggressor and denouncing Hitler, and that manuscript was sent to the Secretary of the League, what happened? According to the admissions of the Secretary, she took it to the Secretary of the Communist Party. It was revised and deleted. All mention about Soviet Russia was taken out of it, and the remarks about Adolf Hitler were toned down. When we consider the overwhelming evidence, I say, documentary proof from their own files, there is but one conclusion which any fair and impartial mind can reach. That is that this is one of a number of front organizations formed by the agents of Stalin. Can anyone be deceived by the communist and the fascist in the United States? When Earl Browder before our committee admitted that if a member of the Communist Party or if the Communist Party failed to follow the decision of the Communist International, he'd have to get out? Can anyone any longer doubt what the true purpose of these organizations is? When we get from the lips of the leaders that in case of war between the United States and Soviet Russia, they would not support America. How much longer can we be duped in the United States? How long can the agents of foreign powers, the agents of Adolf Hitler, working through the German-American Bund, which is an army of the Nazi propaganda machine, how much longer can the agents of Stalin, a ruthless dictator, befool and deceive the American people and occupy with impunity strategic jobs in the United States? I say it is no longer a question whether or not we will permit people to express their honest views. I have no objection to anyone believing in communism or in fascism or any other kind of an ism. America is a free country, and I would defend with my life, the right of every citizen to believe as he sees fit and to express those views so long as he does not violate the laws of our country or so long as he does not betray the nation. But when people take an oath of allegiance to foreign dictators and then seek by deception, by masquerading under false names and titles, to undermine my country, to undermine my government, then I feel justified in saying, what amendment to the Bill of Rights protects spies? What amendment to the Bill of Rights was designed to protect people who are the servants of foreign dictators, who, while they are naturalized, are native-born citizens, nevertheless owe their true allegiance to a foreign dictator? I maintain, my friends, that this is one of the fundamental issues before the American people today. I maintain that it is not an issue of partisanship, that it is an issue so fundamental and so far-reaching that no one can avoid it. I therefore say that the time has come in America when our people must demand a fearless, truthful, and frank exposure of all agents of foreign principles and powers, whether they be the fascist on the one hand, whether they be the communists on the other, or whether or not they be Nazis on the other. For only in that way can we maintain our freedom and our independence. It was said a long time ago that eternal vigilance is the price of liberty, and certainly that is true. When we witness what has occurred across the waters, can we sit idly by and protect people who join organizations that are admittedly communist or fascist organizations on the theory that they are innocent? Well, if they're innocent, and if, as they maintain, that the organization is legitimate, why should there be so much objection to full publicity? I am a member of the Pythians. I am a member of the Odd Fellows. I am a member of a number of organizations. And I wouldn't object if tomorrow you published that fact in every newspaper in the United States. Why has this created such a hue and cry in the United States? My friends, let me say to the leaders of my country, as well as to the American people, that this is not a partisan issue. You are now dealing with the happiness and the liberties of the American people. And this is no time when politics or political considerations should weigh in the scale of justice and of a fearless exposure. What happened is now a matter of public record. That namely, that foreign dictators conceive the clever idea of building up organizations in our midst. It was a part of a worldwide campaign, and we were not the only nation. As a matter of fact, Adolf Hitler went into practically every country where there were people of German descent and organized minority blocs. Didn't he go in the Sudetenland, into Czechoslovakia? Didn't he go into Poland? Didn't he go into Austria? Didn't he enter every country with his spies and his propagandists? And didn't he form minority blocs whose real allegiance was to Germany and not to Czechoslovakia or to Poland? And didn't Stalin organize, or rather perfect, the organization of communist parties throughout the United States? For what purpose did he do that? In order that he might use a lot of gullible, ignorant people to advance the cause of Stalin. And what was that cause? Primarily to obtain possession of important industrial and military secrets. It was one of the most diabolical and clever schemes ever invented by an Eastern mind. It was a scheme which enabled Soviet Russia and Germany to obtain secrets and information, and to build up propaganda agencies in the United States unparalleled in the history of this country. Can we sit down idly and indifferently when we see what happened in France? Didn't Stalin build a communist party in France which formed a popular front, very much like the United Front in the United States? Didn't they organize a league against war and fascism in France? And wasn't it banned by the decree of the French government recently? What happened in France? Stalin succeeded in building up such a powerful group that he paralyzed the whole industrial system of France. France was unable to prepare itself against German aggression. And what did France do? They had to create a semi-dictatorship in order to combat the subversive groups in their midst. Knowing that to be true, my fellow Americans, shall you and I remain blind to the obvious truths before us? I think not, my friends. And I submit to you, the loyal, patriotic women of America, you who love this country, who love its ideals and its principles, you who think more of country than you do of politics, you have come to look upon professional politicians with a question mark. You who believe that the truth should always be told, whether it's diplomatic and expedient to tell it or not. You, the women of America and all of the great women of this country, I, as an humble member of Congress, appeal that you exercise your influence in your neighborhood, among your friends, in order that we may successfully expose and combat the enemies of this country. That we show no favoritism. That we expose a man in high position the same as a man in low position. That we expose the intellectual communist, the intelligentsia who sits around and plots the overthrow of his country, the same as we expose the ignorant and deluded wretch who, on account of hunger and poverty, has been induced to take up the cause. That we show no favoritism, and that we raise the battle cry of all freemen, the battle cry which our fathers used in the days gone by, that we once again call our people to prayer, to religious life, that once again we say we are not ashamed as a people to acknowledge that there is a God in the heavens, a God who enabled 3 million ragged and hungry continentals to achieve their independence, a God who stayed with George Washington at Valley Forge when, with a mere handful of hungry and impoverished continentals, he knelt on his knees and begged of his God guidance and help. A God who has always stayed with America, the God of the Jews, the God of the Gentiles, the God of the Catholics, the God of the Protestants, the God who gave us this wonderful, this beautiful America, and to all of the forces of atheism throughout the world, to the forces of hatred and of bigotry and of intolerance, who would destroy the belief of our people in their God, who would undermine the Christian institutions of our country founded upon the great principles of life. To all of those, I say, they are your enemies, mothers and women of America. To you we look. To you who are not seeking political preferment, to you who are not trying to please an audience, to you who are not playing actor on a stage, but to your sincere hearts whose only thought is your country's good and your God, to you, as an humble member of Congress, I commit a great task, the task of preserving America and doing it so that your children and the children of your children can still be free under God and the American Constitution. We will remain free. And if that happens, it makes no difference what happens to any individual. The political fortunes of any individual in America is a matter of small moment. What is important is that my 3 boys, when I am gone, and when they come into the responsibilities of citizenship, that those 3 boys may be able to greet the rising sun with a proud declaration, "Thank God I am a freeman." I'd rather leave that heritage to them than to leave them all the money in the world. My father left it to me, and he never hesitated. He never hesitated in the face of political criticism, in the face of the denunciation of his leader of his party and his president, in the face of a campaign against him in a solidly Democratic district. He never hesitated to do what he thought was right in order that his children at least might enjoy the priceless blessings of freedom, without which I had rather be dead.
Mutual Special Features Division has brought you the address delivered by Congressman Martin Dyes of Texas at the 110th Convention of the New York City Federation of Women's Clubs, now in session at the Hotel Astor in New York City. We now return you to our studios.